My name is Michael Coates. I'm a former firefighter, but I'm also a former soldier. And it's the stories from the individuals within this military community that I'm desperate to document. This conversation delves into the often forgotten side of military life. From the sleepless nights, the joy of homecoming, to keeping the family together. She is a veteran, a mother, a wife. Episode 6, Louise Vettigan. This is Declassified. So if you could surmise the last 18 years in one word, what would that one word be?
Definitely traumatic.
I mean, in some ways you put it on yourself as well, really, because the end of the last millennium, 99, you, as a young 17-year-old, joined the British military.
I did.
What was a young 17-year-old Louise doing joining the British Army?
I get asked a lot, why did you join the British Army? I'm not from a military family. No one in my family's ever been in the British Army. I was 17. I'd been to school. I got pretty good grades. But from the age of about 7, I'd lived in Salisbury. And it really was, if you can't beat them, join them. I was just really intrigued. I was like, what is that all about? Trotted off to the careers office. I don't think for one minute my family thought I'd actually do it. Okay, let it go off, let it go to the careers office. Then I got through selection. Okay, let us start basic, got through basic. I did win most improved recruit, which everyone still laughs at to this day. I was potentially a bit of a Doris, but I did it. And yeah, I joined the army as a soldier.
And then we kind of fast forward through basic training. Like you said, you won most improved, was it?
Yeah.
And then got out to Germany, did a Kosovo. So you're now a professional soldier and doing what professional soldiers do. And then, like a lot of people, you ended up, or you met your future husband, and that relationship really blossomed early 2002. And then, just like in your own words, then just take it from there.
Yeah, so I joined the field army. I was based in Gütersloh, in Germany. Had the time of my life, loved it. So many different experiences. As you said, I went to Kosovo, did that tour. Yeah, met my husband. He was on the tour. We weren't together then. But like with anything, I said, you know, the girl I shared a room with in Kosovo is still massively in my life now. When you're experiencing these things with people, those people often stay in your life forever, whether you're sharing a room in the block, whether you're on tour. And my husband was kind of part of that patchwork, my early kind of military life. We were definitely friends first. Got together after the Kosovo tour. So it was sort of the summer of 2002, really, that we got together. He definitely wasn't interested in the beginning. No, Louise. but, you know, a little bit of persistence paid off. But it was lovely. You know, we were both young soldiers experiencing crazy things together. And that ended up with us, you know, going out together.
It's good. And quite a lot of solid relationships are founded on shared experiences as well, whether that's a romantic relationship or friendship, and certainly with like parents and children and stuff, the shared experiences really, really bond people together. What was the next step after that? Because things kind of escalated in that relationship pretty quickly and in a really unusual environment as well. Not unusual for someone in the military, but actually it was quite, yeah, full on.
Yeah, I fell pregnant. So unexpectedly, I fell pregnant. I lived in the block. We were together, but hadn't sort of been in a relationship for years. It was definitely a shock. And even down, you say it's unusual. I still remember to this day, my mate, he's still in my life now, lived next door to me in the block, and I was like, I think I'm pregnant. But it was a really male-orientated regimen. I couldn't go to the NAFI and get a pregnancy test because it would have been like completely round the regimen in 5 minutes that Louise is pregnant. So I had to get my mate who lived in the block next door to me to go in the NAFI to buy my pregnancy test. It was just things like that. It was just such a bizarre situation. He kind of bought me my test, went in the toilets, and I was like, but I was quite far gone when we found out I was pregnant. So I'd sort of been on exercise, I'd been doing CFTs, I'd been, you know, doing everything, not knowing I was pregnant.
You're still doing a lot of physical stuff and doing what we do in the military.
So it was really, and I was young. At the moment, I'm 20 years old, you know, I was young. It was a real kind of turning point in my life. Definitely.
What was your feeling though? Because you've got, obviously got this, you wanted to join. Did you have a career planned out?
Yeah, definitely. And as much as I joke and everyone around me jokes, but I was a bloody good soldier. I was good at it. I was good at my job. I got lots of praise for being good at my job. You know, I wanted to be a career soldier, but actually falling pregnant didn't change that for me. I just thought, well, I'll just have a baby and carry
on. Just took it in your stride and just...
Yeah, I was like, well, that's not going to change anything. It did change that we'd been warned off for Iraq, so we'd been doing sort of pre-deployment training. I knew that was going to change. And I can't lie, there was some resentment there. I wanted to go to Iraq.
This is the end of 2002, towards the end, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I fell pregnant. Me and Tony sat down and had a discussion, and, you know, we were going to embrace this curveball that had come our way.
Was you, where was you living then? Because you're pregnant.
In the block.
So when we say in the block, for people who don't know, this is like a kind of big block of accommodation
with loads of different rooms. This is old school German military accommodation. So, you know, it's a big building with lots of rooms, often shared rooms. At that point in time, I'd been promoted, so I actually wasn't sharing a room. But it was mixed accommodation. So in a flat, you've got, I don't know, maybe 8 rooms and then 1 ablutions. So you've got one shower and toilet block. So I'm pregnant, but nothing changes because I'm living in the block. But when I'm pregnant, I just have to go up and use the showers with the lads while they're shaving. It's very bizarre.
It is a surreal, an unusual situation because you're there pregnant, and we've gone, and I, with my partner, has gone through a couple of pregnancies, and you want to create that kind of safe space, you know, to have your child and the certainty of it. I don't believe that a block would be the greatest place to create that. We've got the facing of what's going to happen in 2003 ahead of us.
We were unmarried, so obviously you only get given a house if you're a single... So as a single soldier, if you get pregnant, you get your house when you're 6 months pregnant. You would get given a house as a single serving soldier that was pregnant. So you would obviously get a military house, but not until you're 6 months pregnant. And we weren't married at that time. So that's why I was still in the block, because I was a single serving pregnant soldier to all intents and purposes. But yeah, it was definitely character building. And my room was under the bar. I mean, anybody who's been in the army in Germany knows what the battery or squadron bars are like. I lived under that. So I'm like, oh my God, you know, I need to sleep. You know, I'm growing a baby here. Yeah. And the lads are having the best night of their lives above me.
And I mean, those nights where I was in a different place to you, but they were full on those nights out. And it's the kind of work hard, play hard environment. And it's a bit of a cliche to say it, but it really is. And there's no more better example of working hard than what happened in about February, March. Well, February when a lot of guys and girls deployed to Kuwait first. But a couple of weeks before that, what is life like for you? Because you've got your partner is going. So I'm going to kind of move around a bit. Your partner's going to Iraq. You're staying behind in a rear party.
Yeah.
Pregnant.
Yeah.
What's the feelings like with this?
Hideous. And I'm ill. So I'm really ill. So I didn't just have sickness. I was in hospital on a drip. My organs were drying out. I was really ill in Germany. No family and friends, 20 years old. My husband's going to war. Horrific. Mm. I look at pictures now of me then and my heart breaks. I'm just green and sad and, yeah, really, really awful. And I can't lie, I've talked about this quite openly recently. It's the reason I've only got one child. You know, I was so ill and it was such a traumatic pregnancy. That's never faded for me. Mm. So I was poorly. That Christmas I was in hospital. And then the January, so we're in January 2003 now. And our plan was to marry that December. So we'd marry in December 2003. But we were both serving in a regiment that really wanted to look after us. They wanted to look after me. They wanted to look after our baby. And they just sort of pulled us in and said, look, this could be a nuclear war. We're worried. We're worried for Louise. We're worried for the baby. We really, really think you should get married. And we went away and we thought about it and we were married 4 days later.
Quiet? Family involved?
No family. Grabbed a few mates from the block into the church on camp. On the afternoon of our wedding, we were sorting our landline out because we'd been given a military quarter.
Romantic.
Yeah. It was the most bizarre day of my life. One girl that's still in my life now that was at the wedding, which is really lovely. The other people, you know, it's just not a memory that either of us ever, you know, look back and are fond of. And I just look like the walking dead in any of the pictures. I was so ill. I was just so ill. But I knew at 20 years old, if we were being told that this could be a nuclear war, we don't know what we're going into, you should probably get married, mm-hmm. we should do that. But I don't think our families ever really forgave us.
There was a lot of uncertainty at the time as well, and I think sometimes we can gloss over it and forget that. No one knew what was going on. There was this big adventure awaiting a lot of people. Your husband then went...
He deployed a week after we got married, to the Yoktelet War.
Mm. So Operation Telic was the military operations in Iraq when, you know, we crossed the border from Kuwait into Iraq.
I didn't hear from him again for 3 months.
Letters?
They weren't even really coming in. I was in a better position because I worked in the regiment. Okay. So I would see signals and that kind of thing coming through. So I always felt I was in a better position than maybe some military spouses who weren't serving, because I knew that if anything had happened to him, that they would call me in probably first and foremost. But no, letters weren't even really coming through for the war.
You weren't being together that long. You didn't really know each other that well at this point. You had a baby coming up.
Yep.
This is your story, not your husband's.
So look,
and I'm not going to take anything away from any serving member of the British Army of what they were doing in Iraq and leave, you know, kind of play down any risk that they were in. But back home, there must have been a lot of stress. This baby's kind of coming up to the, you know, going to be born in the summer.
Yeah, and just reliving that right now is horrific. It was horrible. I turned 21 while I was pregnant, so I turned 21 in the March. And my mum came to stay, and we just sat and watched the news because there was no communication, nothing, no phone calls. He was, you know, a very active soldier in what he was doing out there. It was bloody scary. And also, the military hadn't seen anything like it for quite a few years. It was, you know, so it was unknown for everybody. I just watched the news and prayed he'd make it back. But it was horrific and traumatic and stressful and fear like I'd never felt before whilst I was pregnant.
When was your baby due?
So June.
Right, okay. So baby's due in June. I know from personal experience, we got back beginning of June.
He made it back about 5 days before.
Oh,
yeah. So really, really close. And from his point of view as well, he'd gone and I had a little neat sort of bump and it's like, see you later. And I remember the day he came back and I was very, very ill again at the end of the pregnancy. And I just sort of opened the door to our flat and he was just like, oh, my goodness, because I'm suddenly huge and very pregnant and, you know, all the rest of it. So, yeah, he got sent back basically. And I know this was tough for him. He got pulled aside and said, look, she's not well. We don't know how this is going to go. She's in hospital, in and out of. You're going to be the first out. And I know that flight home for him was very scary because he just didn't know what he was going to find. You know, they were worried about me and the baby. It was a horrific pregnancy and they think that the stress didn't help things. So, yeah, that was hard. And I just think when he did get back from the Iraq war, yeah, we were just glad that, you know, we were going to have this baby together.
And was you connected as a couple?
Yeah, yeah. Tony and I are like peas in a pod, you know, right from the get-go. I've known him 18 years. And yeah, we were very, very in love. And to be back together in itself was, you know, just amazing. I remember that feeling.
And what was parenting like? So you have little girl.
Have Madison. Labour was fine. Got sent home. And I don't know. It was everything in our life got turned upside down. And you have to remember, we're still really young. So we're living in a foreign country. I haven't got my mum down the road. You know, I haven't got family. It's me and him and this human being we've been given. I remember she was 10 days old and we tried to go to a mess do. I don't know what we were thinking. Come on, we can do this. Let's get back into the swing of it. And I think we were at the mess do about 10 minutes and I'm like, I need to go home to the baby. You know, my midwife was amazing. You get British midwives over there, but they don't practice in the hospitals, but in the community. And she came around every day for 2 weeks and she taught me how to do a nappy, how to, you know, look after the baby, how to bath the baby. She was absolutely fundamental in those first couple of weeks. But yeah, it was huge, huge culture shock, massive.
Did you feel vulnerable at the time?
Yeah. I mean, I look at pictures now and I sometimes put them on my Instagram and people are like, wow, you look about 12. It really was a kid with a kid. So I definitely remember feeling out of my depth. But like I've always said, I wanted to do my best. Everything I do to 100% the best of my ability. And I didn't look at parenthood any different. I was going to do my best and I read books. And I mean, the internet didn't really exist then, actually, in the form that it does now. But you know, I wanted to be a bloody good mum.
Yeah.
So I did my best.
Did you get the support from the military side? Because you're still a serving soldier.
Still a serving soldier. I went back to work when she was 9 weeks old. So I had 14 weeks maternity leave.
Yeah.
I was poorly a bit before. So, yeah. And that was horrific. That was... Tony went back to Iraq. I started my new job. I got posted on maternity leave. And to them, I was a young soldier posted in. I was going to get all the shit jobs. I was going to get the bad duties. I was going to get the bad jobs. There wasn't the loyalty that my old regiment had had to me.
Okay, yeah.
I was a number. But I was a number living in a foreign country with a brand new baby and a husband on tour.
Was the an attitude of, well, actually, you put yourself in that position 100%. With a child?
At the time, my boss pulled me in, my warrant officer, and said, you've got to pull yourself together. You're a soldier first and a mum second. Sort it out.
It's hard to take that now. I mean, when I was in, you know, when I was 20, I'd have probably said the same kind of stuff. Oh, well, you chose the life, that's your situation. Now as a dad and just being a bit more mature, I just can't...
And I understand that there's duty rotas to put together and there's jobs to be done, and I understood that at the time. And that's where I think I was a vulnerable 21-year-old that just needed someone to look after me. I was broken at that point. I remember sitting in my car at lunchtime and sobbing and just saying, how the hell am I going to sort this out? You know, if I've got to be on the ranges at 6 o'clock in the morning, that's a huge issue for me because, you know, my husband's away. I don't have family and friends on my doorstep, but I still have these commitments of being, a soldier.
Did you try and make it work?
I did. Yeah. For a couple of years, I muddled through. And, it was just never going to work.
And then you decided to take, I suppose, your situation into your own hands. And you essentially, it's a bit of a dirty word, but not in this situation, I don't think. You then refused to soldier, which means essentially you're stopping work.
Yeah.
Because they put you in a situation where you couldn't be.
I've never felt so alone. I was just so lost and so confused and so broken, and it felt like no one would help me. There was no loyalty to me at my new regiment at all, which I did sort of understand as well. So I did. My husband's in Iraq or whatever. He came back from Iraq. Had a bit of time. Then he deployed again on a UN tour of Cyprus.
Yeah.
And that's when I was just like, no, you know, within such a short space of time, we'd been on our own so much. And I just said, I can't do this anymore. And I did refuse to soldier. And ultimately that led to me leaving the military.
Did you feel like you was, because you said a second ago, you give everything your 100%. Did you feel like you was failing at both being a parent and...
Yeah, I felt like, and also really resentful because I had a lot to give. I was good at my job and just a bit of nurturing would have meant I probably, you know, would still be in the military now. You know, it was such a shame. It was an unavoidable, potentially, I suppose, situation. We weren't, the army and I were not on the same page.
I mean, there's a movement now, as you'd call it, with flexible working and understanding
about... Yeah, it's a different
story
now. It would be different if I was in that situation today. And also, I stand by this. It depends who your boss is.
Right.
I stand by that to this day because there was girls, you know, that I'd joined up with that ended up being in not dissimilar situations to me, but potentially had better line managers who said, look, we won't give you nighttime duties. You know, we won't send you on that exercise. You can do rear party. You know, there were ways around
it. There's still rules for you to play in this.
Yeah.
You know, you're not a frontline soldier.
But it just depends. If you've got a boss that's very old school and is saying, no, you will be doing this, then, you know, and I stand by that. Had I had a better boss, potentially the scenario would have ended differently. But ultimately, it was what it was. Because I refused to soldier, I ended up getting discharged. So I didn't even get put on the reserve. So I was never going to get called up again, which made me so sad.
I mean, it's not even a product of the environment. What's the right word? It's just there's a lot of situations or the circumstances that have built up to this point. Did you feel, because you said then again, like, Tony was away a lot, and he's in the British Army, like, and that's to be expected, but did you feel lonely?
Yeah, very, humongously, like, absolutely.
As in a partnership?
But I felt lonely, but it also, you've got to remember, all my friends were deployed as well, so if he was away, all my mates were. I wasn't in the military wife community, because I was a serving soldier, and all my friends. So I felt absolutely deserted as a wife. I really, really did. And, you know, we'd got married and then hardly spent any time together for like 2 years. It was just such a rocky road. It was such a tough start.
So what are we in now? So he came back, he did Operation Telic 3, got back This is right, isn't it? Yeah. And then he came back.
He came back for a couple of months.
Beginning of the summer, 2004. Went and did a. I'm just trying to get the.
And did a UN tour of Cyprus. So we're now in sort of Christmas 2004.
Yeah.
And I just said, enough. So we got a posting back to the UK, sort of, you know, a 2 year out of regiment posting. Nothing more, just to have a breather, just to kind of breathe again. So March 2005, we're in now. Our daughter is soon to be two. Tony has done 2 6-month tours and a war since she's been born. And we now live in the UK. And we tried really hard to reconnect. We tried so hard, but it wasn't enough.
To the point.
We split up. So, you know, I think he'd been through a lot. I think he needed to regroup, and we'd been through so much in such a short space of time. You know, we'd met, fallen pregnant, got married, gone through a war tour, gone through 2 other deployments. Our daughter's not even 2 yet. And we've also had to get our heads around being parents. And we're still 22 and 23.
Was your daughter's connection with you really strong? When she was 2?
Yeah, it was. Although I still spent a lot of time apart from her, because I was still at the early days. I was still a soldier and I was still having to work. Yeah, I mean, right up to today, we have an unbreakable bond, because it's been me and her against the world a lot of the time. We were very close.
Now, the kind of next part, so you the relationship got rocky.
Yeah.
You separated.
Yeah.
Which ended up in divorce.
Yeah, we actually ended up getting divorced, potentially. I don't know, but then it was pretty easy. It was, you know, a situation that snowballed very quickly, and before we knew it, we were divorced.
And that, there's a lot, again, you know, you've alluded to it all then, you know, there's a lot of stress going on at the time, and separation and a little bit of distance.
Yeah.
But that relationship did come back, and it grew stronger over the next couple of years.
Oh, Afghanistan brought us, Afghanistan. Yeah, so, you know, we had some time apart. We did divorce, which in hindsight, I think both of us would agree was rash, and we regretted, but we did it, and life went on. He was always still part of my life because of Madison, and he, you know, we still saw each other. We still spent Christmases together. So we were still very much a family, but me and him had needed some time apart, I think, to just regroup. So we had that time. We took 18 months, and then we started coming back together. And then now we're 2007, and the Afghanistan sort of campaign was really sort of building momentum. And he'd decided to transfer, so he didn't go back to Germany. So he's now a different regiment. Frontline. I'm living in rented accommodation out the army, and he deploys to Afghanistan in 2007, just as we're kind of getting back together.
2007, I think that's when my brother went, and that was the start. I mean, look, I'm not going to disrespect anyone that was injured before 2007. That's not what I'm saying here, but it really ramped up 2007 for about the next 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
It was pretty horrific. How old's your daughter now? So she'd be...
So Madison is now...
Three, four.
Yeah, she's 4 years old now, just sort of starting school. I'll never forget the day he deployed. It was the same day that my mum told me she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And we also went to camp to wave the coach off for him going to tour. So never forget that day. Hard day, hard tour. But lots more letters this time.
Yeah.
And 20-minute phone card a week. So if he was able to get hold of a sat phone or whatever, than he could call home. But yeah, that was a tough tour, but not the toughest.
I mean, we talk about tough, like, so 2007, you're bringing up, you're out the military, but still part of that community. You're bringing your four-year-old up, which is challenging, to say the least. Are you giving yourself enough care during this time?
No, probably not.
Are you getting support of people around you as well? Because people can start very supportive. That's what I'm feeling. That's what the feeling I'm getting from this. People start very supportive, and it's the big hurrah, people leaving. Probably the back end is the same, but what is that middle section like for support? Because you are, we've talked about vulnerability, but you still need support during this. It's a taxing
period.
Yeah,
and, you know, my life is a jigsaw of deployments, and they all hold varying different emotions. I don't have much emotion attached to that 2007 tour.
Okay.
My focus was very much my mum.
I
was, you know, wanting to be there for her. That was that sort of time. And that tour in particular just kind of passed us by. I was, I think, slightly removed because me and Tony were just sort of starting to rebuild our relationship. So it was easier because I wasn't as invested as I previously had been in previous tours and have been since.
Yeah.
So that tour kind of passed us by. He got back, we bought a house, and I ended up getting a really big corporate job. And yeah, we're sort of now in 2010.
Yeah.
Living the dream.
Yeah. And you, I mean, testament to yourself, really. You retrained, got yourself this job. So, you know, you've been a real role model actually to your daughter and the people
around
you. I
always knew I wanted to have success post the army.
Yeah.
So I went back to college. I did a marketing diploma and yeah, I went and got myself a bloody good job. Mm. It was really well paid. But it was long hours. The corporate world is brutal in different ways to the military, obviously. But yeah, it was, you know, there was travel involved, you know, to America, across Europe. But yeah, I was doing it. I was a full-time working mum and I loved it.
And then the military kind of beat you back in the backside again with the Afghan deployment.
Well, me and Tony got married again. That happened in the middle on television. I mean, you can't make it up. So we got married again and, you know, complete extremes. Our first wedding, no one was there. Our second wedding, we can't get away from because everybody, they keep repeating it all these years.
What was it?
So it was part of a BBC series called Marrying Mum and Dad. We were the pilot. It is still going 7 years on or 8 years on, however long it is. They're still repeating it. Yeah, it was funny. The whole ethos was Madison, like, created, you know, thought of the wedding and we just rocked up. So yeah, that bizarre. But we got married again. We're living the dream. And then yeah, Afghanistan 2011 came our way.
At the start we talked about being, you know, 18 years being traumatic.
Yeah, that one I do get emotional.
This is full on now.
Yeah, it was.
It's all right.
Yeah, it was really, really tough. It was the hardest tour I've ever done. Just because it was scary. They were losing people all the time. And I just thought it was only a matter of time until it was my husband.
Just take your time.
You know, I was convinced I was going to be a widow at 27. It was happening. It was in the news every day. You couldn't escape it. It was absolutely brutal. Mm. It was so stressful. And he was in a regiment that were continually losing people. It was just horrific.
And how was Madison responding?
So Madison didn't deal with that tour well at all. She is 7 now. She's in a, you know, we'd bought a house. We thought that equaled our success. That's what everyone aspires to do. And we'd done that. We bought a house But that meant she was in a predominantly civilian school. We weren't in the military community. There was no, you know, we weren't living on a military estate or anything like that.
Your understanding probably wasn't quite there.
People were really like supportive in that they're kind of like, look, we'll be there for you. You're doing so well. It'll go so quickly. All the things you should never say to a military spouse. But she was just really struggling, and she took a stone from the previous Afghanistan into school, into show and tell. And this little girl just sort of said, well, when your dad dies, do you get a new one? How does it work? There was no malice in it. 7-year-olds aren't malicious. But Madison just couldn't deal with that at all. She sort of had so many questions. You know, what does happen? You know, do I get a new dad? Like, how does that work? And she sort of started displaying some really regressive behaviours. She woke up every night. It was like having a newborn baby again. She wouldn't let me leave the room, you know, if I'm going out the lounge. Mum, where are you going? You know, she just was really struggling and was just at an impressionable age where she understood the news. And it was just, it was a horrific time. It was traumatic. It was stressful. And I wanted to help my daughter, but I was really lost into how I could do that. There just didn't seem any support out there. I went to all the charities. I went to everybody I should, and no one would help me. It was all, well, he's alive. He's got his arms and legs. Yes, he's deployed, but he's a soldier. You know, this is your life. You've got to just find your own way to deal with it. And I didn't agree with that. I needed help.
You said something then. You said it really subtly, and I don't know if anyone would have picked up on it. You said about when we started talking about Afghan 2011, you said it was the second Afghan.
Yeah.
You just said it like it was natural to say that. And again, I hope people don't forget that. People who are left behind, and it doesn't have to be conflict. It can, you imagine, like if you get someone gets sent to prison, or if people are away at work a lot, and you really went through it. And did you, let me word this correct, did you resent the military for this, putting you in a situation where actually your daughter's health and well-being's been affected?
I, after everything I've been through, I'm actually really pro-military.
I'm on about 2011.
I know, but I never resented it at that time. I'm still pro. We needed to be there. Tours need to happen. Deployments need to happen. The military means that my husband has got a good job. You know, I've never resented the fact that he's had to go away. I hated the way I felt, and I hated the way my daughter felt, and I hated that there was no support there.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I don't want to get this out as well, like, from our conversation before, and we've met a few times before this interview, and Tony's been very supportive to you, and I've been an amazing dad as well. And I don't want to kind of mix that up as well. You know, like, his life is the military, but his life is his family. So you've got this corporate job going on. I forgot about this.
I'm having to travel quite a bit, and the wheels completely fell off. I couldn't help my daughter. I didn't know how to. She was getting worse and worse with this sort of anxiety, and then I was also drowning in stress, and so I developed stress-induced OCD that tour.
Really?
Yeah.
Just come on.
Yeah, just I've I'd never experienced it before, and I now know, like, since various discussions and just diagnosis, is that extreme stress can do really bizarre things to our brains. And at that point in time, my brain just couldn't deal with everything it was going through. Husband in war, very scary and fearful. And, you know, I organised this funeral, you know, in my head. It was just so stressful. A daughter that couldn't deal with that and was displaying real sort of physical, you know, stress outputs, which I felt I couldn't support, and I felt I was failing her. I had a job which was, you know, really demanding of my time and my energy. My brain couldn't cope, and the output of that.
What was happening?
So it was the responsibility of our daughter completely on my shoulders was consuming. That was solely my responsibility. I had to keep her safe. I had to make sure she was okay. And I'm still at this point, you know, 27,
yeah.
I suppose. Not even that, actually. I'm young,
yeah.
You know, I'm mid-20s anyway. So I was consumed with responsibility. So I would... You know, at night time, I was very, like, stressed about keeping her safe. And if someone would break in, like, what would I do? So I got very obsessed with the front doors, checking they were locked. I broke 2 doors in 6 months just because I'm, like, over-checking the mechanism. I broke 2 doors. And I was obsessed with the cooker hob knobs. Check, you know, are they off? I was... obsessed there was going to be a fire in the house, so I'd turn all the plugs off every night. But on the same token, I'm really embarrassed that I'm feeling these things, because by nature I'm a coper. I just get on, I do this, and I couldn't control these things. It was like having a devil and an angel on my shoulder, and I'd go up to bed and this voice on this shoulder is going, no, check the door, I really don't think that's okay, and the other one's going, it's fine, you've done it, it's completely locked. It was scary. I was like, what is going on? I confided in my mum. But yeah, that was stressful. And he came home and it disappeared.
So it was a real
instant.
Security thing?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was temporary and it taught me a lot of lessons.
Did you speak about it to anyone else at the time?
No. I've only spoke about it in the last year.
Did you Sorry, you might have said this already. Did you recognise it at the time, or was it later than you thought?
No, I didn't.
That's not right.
Actually, in the moment, I didn't recognise it. But afterwards, when I started, I never went to the doctors or anything at that moment in time. But afterwards, I did speak about it to medical professionals, and they were like, you know, well, this can happen.
Because of that separation... I'm assuming that's what... it must be. The separation's there, you're feeling...
And not just
secure.
The separation, the stress of where he was.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, combination. And was other people going through some... Oh, like
I've got no idea. I didn't have a military community over that tour. I was completely out of it. But there was lasting effects. Tony came back from Afghanistan in one piece. Very pleased that day came, but I wasn't easily fixed, and I developed some cardiology problems, some, you know, high blood pressure. Again, really tough. I was signed off work for 3 months, had to see a cardiologist, you know, every week. I had every test under the sun done on my heart. And again, was told it was down to stress, and I had to make some lifestyle changes. And that's hard to hear, you know, that everything I've now been through, we're kind of 10 years down the line, but I've been through an awful lot, and that's now having a physical impact on my body. So, yeah, we decided to make some changes, and I gave up the job. So I did it. I did that job for 5 years, but I gave it up. And we rented our house out and we moved back into military quarters to give ourselves a breather.
Just to
refuel. I talk about emotional fuel tank a lot. As I've got older, as I've matured, as I've been reflective on everything that I've been through, as I've learned, you know, I'm a pretty old hat in this military community these days. I've learned so much about how we as humans function. And I talk about our emotional fuel tank and when it's full and when it's empty. And yeah, I just needed to fill mine up a little bit. So we had 2 years, non-deployable. Tony didn't go anywhere. And I went back to work, obviously, but in a part-time, much less stressful environment. And we had 2 years to really repair, which was lovely and refreshing.
You say refreshing, but you got yourself into... you jumped kind of feet first into something else. And again, that's testament to you, I think. And you saw a problem, you've mentioned it. You saw a problem with where is the support network for children of those that are serving. You then founded and set up Little Troopers.
Yes. Yeah, I did. That Afghanistan tour was hard for me. It was hard for our daughter. And I was so angry that no one supported military children specifically. You know, there are charities supporting military families or, you know, all the big hitters. But there was no one solely concentrating on what military children are going through, what they're feeling, and finding specific ways to support them. It didn't exist. So, yeah, I founded the charity.
You made it exist. And
what a learning curve.
What are we facing then? So what are children facing with regards to kind of separation, or is it you know, the trauma of seeing their parent in trauma or whatever? What you deal with this day in, day out?
Yeah, I do. And there's so many unique challenges to being a military child. They do experience different scenarios to their civilian peers. You can't get away from that. And no one is saying that deployments, exercises, moving, postings should stop. Absolutely not. That's part of military life. And you do know what you're signing up for when you sign up and if you've got children and all the rest of it. But there should be support there to ensure that those children don't have lasting problems. So there's loads of challenges and the charity supports all of those.
It's it is a great little charity and you run off a shoestring and we should... It pains me that you guys aren't being funded appropriately and consistently. Mm. And yeah, you can get a handout every couple of months, but it is that consistent flow of cash that's
coming in.
Yeah,
we have no money, but it's a charity loved by so many in the military community because it is doing it. It's out there. We're not talking about it. We're not skirting around policy. The charity... is me just doing a good thing to try and make the lives of military children a little bit better, because I never want another child to go through what mine went through. It was to see that as a parent is heartbreaking.
I'm going to put the website in the show notes as well so everyone can come and have a look at you a bit in more detail, the Little Troopers. And I'm going to jump us now from 2012 to this week.
Yeah.
Tony's just got back from another 6 months in Afghanistan, although a different situation now. We're going to have to wrap up soon. There's so much we can talk about with you. But I want to kind of, in your words, surmise what this last 6 months,
again,
6 months has been like.
You know, I'm bruised. I'm bruised by tours. I'm bruised by... I wrote a blog post recently called Afghanistan, You've Broken Me Once Again. You know, Iraq and Afghanistan have shaped me as Louise. Mm. They've shaped me as a person. When my husband told me he was going back there, I just thought, I can't do it again. I've talked a lot more about it this time. I've got an Instagram, I've got a blog. I've been very open and very honest about the realities of military life, the realities of deployment, the realities of Afghanistan. The last 6 months have been so hard. I've definitely struggled and I've definitely had some dark times. And I feel emotionally depleted today because he only came back 2 days ago and it does take time to repair. Once again, my daughter has really suffered this tour. She's 15 now. We've been on such a journey, but once again, it brought her anxiety back. So really tough. I can't cry again on your podcast, but I'm close. You know,
it's still really raw.
We're in it. I'm still not repaired. We're moving in 10 days. So we've just done a tour. We're packing up boxes. That is my life. It's my patchwork. The military has made me who I am today. Afghan and Iraq have made me who I am today. And I will always be a little bit bruised. I will always have some open wounds that I bury. But when you hear those words, they pretty much come back to the surface.
Thank you, Louise, for taking your time today.
Thank you.